Clay from Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome to ParentCast, a podcast dedicated to new parents, new babies, and their new lives together. So listen and relax, because it's free, it's funny, and it's a lot better than therapy. Welcome to episode 4 of ParentCast. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
And I'm sick.
Oh, Blake is so sick, ladies and gentlemen.
Sick. Oh my God, it's awful.
What's going on?
Oh, I just got this nasty head cold and I'm an absolute mess. You're lucky I'm even doing this podcast right now.
I know, I'm going to need to disinfect your microphone.
I know, I don't even want to get out of bed. I don't want to like eat. I don't want to do anything. Maybe it's like chicken soup's in order, but even then I can't even taste it anyway. What a mess.
Food is not on the menu for Blake right now.
Food is definitely not on there.
And the funny thing is today's topic is food. It's baby-led weaning.
Of course, only naturally.
You know what, but we can still work with it. But before we get into our topic,
time to get to the judgment-free zone.
The judgment-free zone, for any of you who are new to us, is a segment where we can confess something, get something off our chest, but it's also where we set the stage, because this entire podcast is meant to be judgment-free. So Blake, do you have something you need to confess this week?
I do, as a matter of fact. The other day, I was watching the Olympics, or I was watching something, and Reese was kind of crawling around in the family room. And, you know, actually, it kind of relates to our topic today of baby-led weaning. Because we do baby-led weaning, you'll find out that it's basically about giving kids food and letting them eat the food. And a lot of the times, the little bits of food or whatever that they chew or whatever, they just throw it everywhere. They just throw it all over the house. And I love my wife. She's the best. But when she does the feeding sometimes, she isn't the greatest at cleaning up after our child.
That's what the Roomba is for.
Yeah, the Roomba, that piece of garbage. So as I was watching the Olympics the other day, Reese was crawling around in the family room, like I said, and I happened to notice like an old piece of food that was on the ground. And I, you know, was watching him, and he was just crawling around, and the piece of food was still there, and then he escaped my sight for a little bit. And then as I looked down, the food was gone.
Oh, no.
And this must have been like a puff or an apple. Or I don't know what it was. It was like this, you know, this tan color type food.
This mystery piece.
It's mystery meat over here. It's basically Spam. And the food is gone. I look up. There's Reese. He's sitting up and he's just chewing. I don't know what he's chewing on, but he's just chewing and he's smiling like crazy. So I was like, well, oh, well, he ain't dead. So I just let him keep chewing it. And he swallowed it, and then we moved on.
Well, now I know. I need to check the floor a little bit better.
Oh, my word. There's just food everywhere.
Well, getting that started, you know, our child is eating a lot of things at this point. But I think a lot of it is in part of the fact that we've been doing some baby-led weaning.
Correct.
And he loves to eat, and he loves to explore, I guess, even if it's on the floor, he loves to explore different things. But we wanted to have someone come in and talk about what baby-led weaning is, because even we don't have all the answers, and a lot of our friends wonder what it is, and Blake himself was a little confused about the topic.
Well, confused isn't the word.
Okay.
It's just more like completely clueless. again, the common theme in these podcasts is that I'm pretty much just clueless, and I'm just here. I'm just here hanging out, you know. I'll say this, though. The baby-led weaning, as we're doing it, you'll eventually learn in the interview when it comes up what it's about and what happens and how you get the food in the kid's mouth and everything. But it's scary, dude. It's so scary watching this kid eat food on his own and getting these little bits of food in there. Oh, it's terrifying.
I don't think it's scary at all. I think it's just going to take more practice. But nonetheless, to help calm your fears a little bit, we're going to interview expert Jill Rapley. She's actually an author of the baby-led weaning books.
And she's from a unique place, too.
Unique. Okay, where?
Across the pond, baby.
Yes.
That's England.
Jill is from England, yes.
I guess
Let's welcome Jill. Today we are joined by author Jill Rapley. She's a co-author of Baby-Led Weaning, the Baby-Led Weaning Cookbook, and Baby-Led Breastfeeding. Thank you so much for joining us. And Jill, you're all the way from England, right?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very windy at the moment.
Well, it's very snowy here in Rhode Island, so our elements combined. You know, we're staying inside, all of us, I guess. It's a good thing we're having this interview.
Yeah.
So let's start off just by telling us what the definition is of weaning.
Well, that depends where you live. There are many definitions, but the one that I prefer is the one that is probably the truest one, and it incorporates everything. So it says that weaning is a gradual process of change from a fully milk diet to a diet that has no, or sorry, fully breast milk diet, that a diet has no breast milk. And I think you can read formula in exchange for breast milk within that. So it's not, as it's often used in the UK, the first mouthful of solid food. And it's not, as it's often used in the rest of the world, the end of breastfeeding. It's kind of everything in between that. Those are the two extremes, but it's everything in between.
Yeah, it is. It's been definitely interesting talking to friends here in the U.S. because you're right. Over here in the U.S., when we say weaning, we think that that means the child is completely off either breast milk or formula. So we'll be able to set the stage straight. Now, how exactly did baby-led weaning get started?
It really stems from the years I worked as a health visitor, which doesn't really have an equivalent in the States. It's pretty close to a public health nurse with a focus on well children. So health visitors advise mums and dads on things like starting solid foods. And they're interested in the normal processes and what happens with babies who are well and developing normally. And I noticed that a lot of the babies on my caseload were, or at least I was going to say the babies were struggling. It was their parents who were struggling to get them to accept solid food. The problem mostly occurred around about 8 months when the baby suddenly just didn't want to be spoon-fed anymore and was starting to refuse foods and get a bit picky about what they would and wouldn't eat. And in pretty much every case, letting the baby feed themselves sorted the problem out. And it just occurred to me that it was perhaps being fed that they weren't liking, not the food itself. But at that time, I kind of had in my head that it would be nice to start the whole weaning process that way, with the baby leading the way. But because back in those days we were all introducing solids around about 4 months, there was nowhere I could really go with that. It wasn't until the recommended minimum age changed to 6 months that suddenly it all fell into place, because it's what all six-month-old babies do, grab stuff and take it to their mouth. And it's kind of like they've always been there showing us, but we didn't see what they were showing us.
So, Jill, this is Blake here, by the way.
Hi. I thought your voice had deepened suddenly.
Oh, yeah. I know, right? Yeah, I got a really bad cold all of a sudden, right? As you're talking, I'm getting a little confused.
Okay.
Could you just tell me what exactly baby-led weaning is? Like, you're saying a six-month child is bringing food to its mouth. So is that exactly what it is, or...?
Okay. At its most basic, yeah, it says if you've waited till 6 months to introduce your baby to solid foods, then why would you need to use purees? Because they can pick the stuff up themselves and they can chew it. So you can go straight in with the solid stuff. But in its kind of purest, ultimate form, baby-led weaning could actually start pretty much from birth. In other words, if we sat all babies on our lap or laid them in our arms while we were eating and let them join in when they were ready, they actually wouldn't do it till around 6 months anyway. They might reach out and smack your plate at around 5 months or something, or maybe grab something and hit themselves in the face with it, but they wouldn't actually really start eating anything until 6 months or later. So in a way, we could let babies deal with the whole thing right from birth onwards. We would never need to use the term weaning, because they would just get on with it. But because we have this idea of needing to manage things, and we have a recommended minimum age, then I tend to go with the six-month thing. But baby-led weaning involves having the baby sat with everyone else when they're eating, having food that is of a shape and size that they can pick up, making sure that all the foods that are offered them are healthy and safe for babies. So it's kind of a whole approach. It's not just a different way of cutting up your vegetables.
So how often should the baby eat, and how often should they nurse? Like, I know you said that you could get a newborn to do baby-led weaning. Is there like a fine balance there? Should we go towards that, or should we just go to baby-led weaning and put food in his mouth right from the beginning?
Okay, I'm going to pull you up there. We wouldn't ever put food in their mouth. That is the number one thing. Baby-led weaning means the baby sets the pace and the baby does it. So my point about starting from birth really is that at that age, babies are equipped to feed themselves at the breast. They can, if they're given the right circumstances, they can find the breast, they can attach onto the breast, they can feed. And gradually their skills change and develop such that they're able to reach out and grab things and bring them to their mouth. And they could take charge of all that. So we wouldn't need to decide. We would do everything on demand. This is the kind of the purest form, if you like. We would breastfeed on demand. We would let babies touch food, get acquainted with it, start to eat it when they were ready. So we can just hand the whole thing over to them. In practice, because we don't have food lying around the house all the time, we would just try to include the baby in any meal that's going whenever anyone else is eating, to be part of the social occasion from as early as we like, but certainly from around 6 months, and let them copy and explore and so on. But can carry on nursing on demand and try and kind of keep the milk feeds, whether it's bottle or breast, separate from the solid meals. Because for a baby, beginning with solids in this way, it's really not about eating. It's about exploring, discovering, sharing a social occasion. And they can get all their nourishment. And from their point of view, their frame of reference for getting nourishment and dealing with their hunger is from milk feeds. So those just carry on in the background. So we don't have to ask ourselves questions like, should we nurse first or give the solid food first? We just carry on as if the solid food weren't there and think of that as an add-on, as an extra form of play, if you like. And then gradually the baby tells us that there's something different going on here, and they stop asking for quite so many milk feeds and so on. But it doesn't happen till much later, not usually till around the age of your little one, 10 months or so.
Blake had said, you know, does it vary? So now that he's 10 months old, for example, and he does, he sits down during the times that we eat, should he even be having snack?
It's nice to offer them. It's really about offering, and then babies will decide. There's no other way to be sure. A baby at that age can't actually ask for food. I mean, they can ask for a milk feed, but they can't really make it clear what they want. That's why we have to offer foods and accept that they may be turned down. That's a baby's way of saying, no thanks, I'm fine. And it's the same with what sort of foods to offer. If we offer a variety over the course of a day, then they will get the nutrients they need. But if they turn something down, it's their way of saying, I'm fine, I don't need that. So snacks are good, but for even well into toddlerhood, the breastfeeds or formula feeds can act as snacks. It works better with breastfeeding because baby can take exactly what they need and you don't have to worry about how much to make up or anything. So it's easier to do alongside breastfeeding, but it's not exclusive to breastfeeding.
Are there any babies in particular who shouldn't be doing baby-led weaning?
There aren't babies who shouldn't be doing it, but there are babies for whom it wouldn't be safe or sensible to ask them to rely on that. In the same way, there are babies who need additional help with their movement or other aspects of their development. So babies who have a developmental delay or some sort of disability or who were born very prematurely, they would need extra support. But what I really upsets me is when people kind of define a baby by his disabilities, by what he can't do rather than by what he can. And I've come across a lot of babies who can't do only baby-led weaning, but they sure enjoy being able to do some of their feeding by themselves. And a couple of parents have said to me, because of their particular baby's condition, all the professionals were telling them, he'll never be able to feed himself. Well, no, he'll never be able to totally nourish himself that way, but it doesn't mean he can't enjoy the sensations of eating and do whatever he can. So it's about recognizing babies who need additional support, not saying they can't do it.
In terms of getting the nutrients, Jill, does baby-led weaning, does that lead to a lack of nutrients such as like zinc and iron? Like if they're not getting all the food that they should be getting, or they're not, does it lead to not getting enough nutrients in that manner?
We have no evidence that that's the case. Nobody's actually checked that out yet. There are some studies in progress. I heard of one which hasn't been published yet, which said the opposite, that actually babies who fed themselves got more in the way of iron. That particular one looked at iron, but sadly it's not been published. But it's a common fear, and I think it really relates to the fact that we have this residual idea that we know better than babies what they need, and we need to control what they need. The question that often goes alongside that is, how do we know they're getting enough to eat, and what if they don't seem to be eating much? Shouldn't we top them up with spoon feeds or whatever? But that negates the whole principle, which is that the baby knows what he needs. I had a mom ask me once when she was just beginning with baby-led weaning, she said, how do I know he's getting enough? And I said to her, you've been nursing your baby for 6 months now. Please don't tell me. Nobody has ever asked you, how do you know he's getting enough? how do you answer them? And she said, well, I just say he knows what he needs. Well, same goes now. The only difference is you can see what he's eating, and so you can get anxious that he's not eating enough. But in fact, we probably overfeed most of our babies. We have an epidemic of childhood obesity at the moment, certainly in the States and the UK, and here we are worried about babies not getting enough. It just doesn't make any sense. It could be an issue in countries where food is scarce. That obviously there's another issue there, but that's again outside the normal situation. So as long as babies are offered healthy foods and not loads of ready meals and things laden with salt and sugar and so on, there's no reason to suppose they won't get enough. Babies don't starve themselves.
So I guess then, from my understanding, the way you're describing it then, that variety is the key for nutrients then, and then making sure that the whole family, parents, other siblings, even the baby, they eat healthily then. So what would you
Absolutely.
Recommend that they eat?
Well, I mean, they may be vegetarian or vegan or whatever. Vegan is a bit tricky with babies. I don't really want to go into that one because I think that does need some support from a nutritionist or dietitian. But vegetarianism can work well. But assuming they are meat eaters, then everything they would normally eat, as long as it's prepared in a way that isn't laden with all these, you know, salt and sugar and chemicals and whatever. I think a key point is, especially in terms of iron and zinc, that they can start right in with meat. If you've lots of the old kind of rules about how to start with introducing solids related to a baby who was immature at the point where they're introduced, when you're starting off with a baby 3 or 4 months old, their gut is not ready to cope with an awful lot of different foods. So the idea about starting gently with fruits and veggies and maybe introducing a new food every 3 days, all of that stuff is still sitting there in people's heads, and they're often approaching it at 6 months like that. But actually, all of that rationale was around an immature baby with an immature gut. When you have a six-month-old baby who has a well-developed gut and a robust immune system and is ready to make these adventures, then we don't need to be nearly so cautious. And there is certainly no need to not introduce some of the foods that we wouldn't have introduced at the beginning before. So, for example, parents were told to wait until 6 months to introduce meat. That wasn't because it needed to be 2 months after the start of weaning. It was because it needed to be around 6 months. If you're starting at 6 months anyway, you can go straight in with that. Same applies to eggs, for example. All of that waiting was based on starting too early.
It makes a lot of sense. That's actually something that my pediatrician just had a talk with me about at Reese's 9-month appointment. You know, I had told him, oh, we haven't done eggs yet because I've heard I shouldn't. And he said, no, you know, give him eggs, give him both the egg yolk and the egg white. Exactly. You know, jump in it, especially with protein. So I'm happy to hear mm-hmm. you say that. I've read your books and I saw that some of the first foods that people should be starting their babies with, especially around the 6-month mark, if they want to do baby-led weaning, are things like ripe pear or an avocado. And you mentioned to even keep the skin on these because it's easier to hold, especially for those slippery foods. So one time when Reese was eating, he actually bit off a huge chunk of not just the avocado, but the avocado skin, which is pretty tough. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if there's ever a reason to get food out of their mouth if you are concerned as a parent.
I can't think of an occasion where that would be necessary normally. There are occasions when they bite off something. Part of learning to cope with foods in their mouth is them working out what to do with that. The key is that they need to be sitting upright, not leaning back, and they need to be focusing on what they're doing. If we're starting to get excited and jump about and look anxious, then we're taking away the baby's concentration from what he's supposed to be focusing on, which is dealing with this piece of food in his mouth. So we need to keep everything calm and just wait and let him deal with it. If a baby really does get something stuck, and that can happen outside of baby-led weaning anyway, then we're looking at first aid procedures, in which case it's about tilting the baby down and banging him on the back, not about fishing around inside his mouth, which would nearly always push something farther back. The only kind of proviso to that, I guess, is that sometimes babies get a little piece of, quite often something quite sort of chewy, like some fresh bread. When they've munched on that a bit, it can get caught either in their cheek or in the roof of their mouth, especially if they've got a high arch to their palate, and they're kind of not aware it's there. Now, that's fine all the while they're sitting upright and eating, but if they were to be laid down with something still in their mouth, it could be dangerous. So it is worth just having a look inside your baby's mouth and maybe gradually teaching the baby to put a finger inside and feel around. And you might want to do that with your own finger first. But you're looking for something quite near the front of the mouth. We're not talking about getting stuff out of baby's throats because that would nearly always push it farther back. But if there is like a piece of bread stuck up in the roof of the mouth, you could get that out at the end of a meal.
One thing that I've actually done with Reese is whenever he's done eating, I've now taught him to open his mouth. So I say, okay, open your mouth, say ah, and he'll mimic me opening my mouth. And I just take a quick glance. I don't stick my fingers in there, but that's a way.
That's a good idea. Yeah. That's a really good idea. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. you talked about getting the baby to actually put a finger in his mouth or her mouth to get the food out. How would you teach a kid to do that? I mean, that seems like kind of complicated.
I guess kind of it's not really something that you could do with a baby of your son's age, but toddlers can be encouraged to do that. I mean, they would copy. You would talk about what you were doing and get them to feel. And the first time they feel that there is something there, then they know what they're looking for, kind of thing. It's a bit like, how do you teach a child to clean their teeth? It's kind of by example and gradually is the answer.
Or how to wipe their own bum. I can't wait for that day to happen.
You know, Jill, I appreciate all that you're saying about all of this, but I got to tell you, I'm a regular guy. This baby-led weaning, it's really cool, but it scares the heck out of me. I mean, we're doing it obviously with our son Reese, and I every time I see him, I see him like either like gagging, and immediately I think, oh my God, he's choking. I have to rescue him. I have to be Superman and get in there and get that food out. So what I do is, when mom's away, I cheat and I just give him purees. What do you think about doing like a hybrid of baby-led weaning and purees, and for dads like me who are just terrified of killing their kid?
I think you have to do what you're comfortable with, absolutely. Again, none of this has really been researched because nobody's looked at it. Although baby-led weaning has been there for ages, people have been doing it all over the world. They just haven't given it a name. It's really only the name that's different. And we've always advised finger foods from around 6-7 months onwards. So that's nothing new. It's the idea that you don't need purees first or as well as. And there's actually one of the pieces of research which has come out in the last few years made a comment about how baby-led weaning has already been going on. And the researchers said, if it were dangerous, we would know by now. You know, it's been out there forever. It started, I'm sure, way before there ever were any purees. I'm not sure. I think it's interesting doing a hybrid. Like I say, you must do what you're comfortable with. But if you're doing it with a kind of baby-led weaning head on, I think that's great, because then you're not likely to go into some of the risky areas of spoon feeding, which are around persuading babies to take more than they really want or to eat foods that they don't like or don't need. And that's really one of the risks, because when in spoon feeding, it's really the parent who's in more control than the baby. It kind of sets babies up to refuse foods because they have to refuse before they can say no, if you know what I mean. Whereas with baby-led weaning, they just stop when they've had enough. So you have to be very sensitive to their cues that they've had enough or enough of that food. The other thing is that you tend to have put a certain amount in a little bowl and you've kind of decided that's the amount you want the baby to eat. And so it's easy to feel upset if they want to stop before they've reached that point. Whereas with baby-led weaning, it's actually very hard to see how much they have eaten sometimes. I'm actually struggling to remember what your original question there was. Oh, about doing a hybrid, yeah. I am not sure to what extent babies might get a little bit confused between what they're supposed to do with their mouth. I don't think it's a big issue, but taking food off a spoon is a particular skill, and chewing food as you bite it off is a different skill. And I think babies probably can cope quite well with both. But I think there may be some who would prefer to learn one first and then the other, a bit like mixing bottle feeding and breastfeeding, really.
I've noticed in particular, we've been giving our son a lot of yogurt. He's been on antibiotics recently, so to help combat that. And of course, I've just been giving him his yogurt on a spoon. And I've been doing just like you said, where, you know, he would turn his head away, often kind of three-fourths of the way through the container. And instead of my forcing him to eat the last fourth of the container, I realize he's done. And I want to, you know, be okay with his signals and make sure that I'm following his signals.
I think that's absolutely great, and that's a lovely way to combine the both. I think one point I would like to make is that until we talked, see, some people are a little bit critical of what they would see as the purest baby-led weaning, and they would say that, you know, some people who do it are a bit fanatical and would never have a spoon anywhere near their baby. That's kind of the extreme, the pure version, and purees and only spoon feeding is the other thing. And in fact, most people do a bit of both, but until we had something called baby-led weaning to talk about, a lot of people didn't know there was an alternative to purees. They assumed you had to start that way. Now at least we can have a discussion about what a hybrid might be like, where actually we couldn't even have had that discussion a few years ago.
Going back to my fears, could you just describe to me what you think the difference between choking and gagging would be like? For example, Mary said that the book you wrote, like, the gagging is natural, and I've seen it firsthand, and I feel like I cannot tell the difference. I just see his face go red and I see his mouth open and I get so nervous. So could you explain to me the difference?
Well, I think since we wrote the book, I've done a lot of thinking about this, and we've been asked about it a few times, and I actually think there are three things here. There's gagging, there's something I would call cough and splutter, and then there's true choking. Now, gagging is a vomiting style reflex. Some babies actually will vomit with it, so it's a retching movement. It's usually quite quiet, and it's just the body's response to something that's gone a little too far back, and it's pushing it forward to chew it a little bit more. It's the response you get if you stick your finger down your throat. That's a gag response. And it seems to be a very common part of baby-led weaning, and probably it's part of babies learning how far it's safe to push a piece of food back or how full to fill their mouth. Because if they overdo it, they'll trigger that reflex. And interestingly, in my experience, older babies who haven't been able to feed themselves, been allowed to feed themselves in the beginning, and who aren't allowed to do that till later, quite commonly seem to overfill their mouth. They don't seem to know that there's a point where they should stop. So it seems to be a useful thing, gagging. Cough and splutter reflex is when something does get farther back than that and does threaten the airway. But it will have happened to you quite possibly in the last week. Something you've eaten has made you cough and you've brought it forward and you're fine. And that can happen with a drink or even with purees. In fact, very commonly with purees, because babies suck purees into their mouth, so they tend to go straight to the back of the throat. So that would be a coughing and spluttering type reflex, quite noisy, and the baby may look quite distressed at the time, but they're able to shift it. And then you have true choking, which is often quite silent, and a baby breathes in, something blocks their airway, and that's it. And then they would tend to go blue, and quite quickly, you know, you would know there was something seriously wrong. That is incredibly rare. And I don't know how many of the cases where children are said to have choked are actually to do with food anyway. We hear of kids choking on marbles and little toys and Lego bricks and all sorts. I know personally of a baby who very, very nearly choked. He was saved in time, but his brother had given him, or put in his mouth, a little chocolate button, and he just kind of inhaled that.
Wow.
And then his mother didn't notice because he was sitting on her lap facing outwards, and it wasn't until she just suddenly realized he wasn't breathing that there was a problem. So, but that is just very, very rare, and that was somebody putting something into the mouth of a baby who couldn't have got it there for himself. Mm-hmm. So making sure the baby is the only person who puts food in his mouth, and making sure he's sitting upright to eat, and making sure he can concentrate on what he's doing, these are all ways to keep babies safe. And what interests me is that we have sort of assumed that the other way, the way we've done things in the past, is okay and is safe. But as I've said, when babies suck things off a spoon, it's easy for them to get it straight to the back of their throat. Mm. And the sort of games with airplanes and trains that we've traditionally played to get babies to eat distracts them from what they should be concentrating on. So it's hard to see just quite how safe, why we thought that is so safe.
So you're saying
now we're suddenly worried.
So you're saying the games that people play could help lead to this coughing and spluttering or choking?
I don't know that. What I'm saying is, why do we assume that those are safe if we understand that distracting babies while they're eating is not safe? And you think, with the last time you had a cough and splutter incident, it probably was when someone made you laugh while you were eating, you know? And yet we think it's okay to do that with babies.
Sure.
And so there's this sudden alarm that they're going to choke when they feed themselves, but we don't have any evidence they aren't actually safer doing that.
Well,
yeah?
With the amount of stuff that my kid puts in his mouth, oh my word, I'm surprised that he hasn't choked or anything, because I feel like he's always just putting something in his mouth. But I will say that our experience so far is that it seems, the way you've described it, that he's only gagged. He's never choked. And I'm actually really surprised. I'm happy about that. I've never had to forcibly remove something out of his mouth, which is great. And it seems like he's getting better with the gagging reflex. Like he knows, okay, this thing, I think it's a little too big. Let me spit it out and I'll try to eat it again. Do you ever see any like progress in that nature?
Absolutely, yeah. And for most babies, it does only last for a few weeks and then they seem to just get around it. But yeah, I've seen the baby do that sort of within the space of one meal, almost poke something in his mouth. And then it was actually a baby holding a piece of parsnip and he shoved it in and pulled it out and shoved it in and pulled it out. And finally he got to grips with it. But he was learning and it was fascinating to watch. And each time he made himself gag, but it didn't bother him. It was upsetting to watch for the parents and those of us looking, but he was not bothered at all. He was just learning stuff.
Reese actually did that this morning with a huge piece of apple. I've been giving him, he's infatuated by apples, and he did the same thing. He had put way too big of a piece, and he kind of just fished it out and then gnawed on it a bit. So yeah, he's learned a lot. So I wanted to start off, Joey.
Can I just pick up a little point there? I think the other beauty of offering, when babies are starting out, they have a nice big piece of food. So they're holding on to one end. So if it goes in too far, their automatic response is to pull it out without even having to think about that. That's the first thing that happens, is they pull it out. So they are in control. Sometimes a little piece can snap off. An apple is one of those foods. If it's too crisp, they can actually snap off a piece, and then they might struggle to deal with what's in their mouth. But mostly, if that's one of the advantages of giving nice big pieces of food, because babies are always hanging on to the other end.
Exactly.
So it's like almost too big for them to choke on. It's too big for them to put in their mouth and shove it down their throat.
Yeah.
Well, we had a bunch of our friends on Facebook actually send in some questions, and Blake's going to start off those for us.
Yeah, Kristen K, she asks, how does puree versus baby-led weaning affect calorie intake? Yeah, since we're not forcing our child to eat, what should we do if they are interested in all on eating, or they are not eating, you know, quote unquote, enough?
Well, I think I'd kind of refer you back to some of what I said before. We don't know exactly how it affects calorie intake. There is one piece of research which shows that babies who have been baby-led weaned, when they're toddlers, they tend to eat more healthily and have less sugary, calorie-laden foods. They don't choose them. So it would seem to be a good thing in terms of preventing an overdose of calories and overweightness and obesity. In terms of getting enough, this is where it's really important that they are allowed to keep up their milk, the intake of milk, for a decent amount of time. The best, by that I mean breast or bottle, the best and most condensed and kind of nutritious food for a baby of any age, but certainly up to a year, is their breast milk or formula. Anything else is not going to be as nutrient dense or have such a good balance or even have as many calories, unless it's actually just a kind of teaspoonful of sugar or something awful. But in general, foods will not have the calorie content that milk has for babies. And with breastfeeding in particular, the baby is always in control of how much they take at the breast from birth onwards. And if they're given too much other food, they cut down how much breast milk they have. With a formula-fed baby, it's easier to make sure they still finish their bottle. There are ways of getting a baby to suck to get him to finish the bottle, even if his appetite is not good because he's had a whole load, his tummy is full of solid foods. But it's the crucial reason why we should let the baby decide how quickly to reduce the milk feeds, which will not be as quickly as we're used to. You wouldn't expect them to start reducing their milk feeds until at least 9 months, and quite often not till much later than that. So up until a year, their main source of nourishment should be their milk. So in that sense, puree feeding has the power to for a breastfed baby to end up with reduced calorie intake because their volume in their tummy of whatever food is not going to have the calories in it that the breast milk would have, and they would then take less breast milk. For the formula-fed baby, it's the opposite problem because they can be encouraged to take all their formula and however much puree the parent decides they need on top of that, so they can end up taking on far too much. So it just seems that letting babies make the decision is probably the safest way to ensure that that baby gets the right amount of food and calories for him.
Yeah, definitely. Well, our friend Hannah, she wanted to know if baby-led weaning limits the types of foods that your child can eat. And I kind of want to put a little part, especially when they first start. So say they are at that 6-month, 7-month mark, you know, how should they be preparing these foods so that they're suitable for babies at that age?
Okay, that's a good question. The first thing to bear in mind is that babies don't need food at the age when you're starting. It's not about food. It's about exploring and discovering. So in a sense, it doesn't matter if they can't eat it, as long as they can handle it and find out about it and taste it. And you know, it's not about eating. So we need to kind of get that out of our heads. Many people say that actually the opposite is true, that baby-led weaning increases the number of foods they can eat, especially when perhaps you're going out. There are likely to be things on a menu, even if you have to kind of wash off the sauce or something, if that's a bit salty, that the baby can handle and can have a go at. Whereas if you've got to remember to take something with you, you might be limited in what you can take out with you. And it's easy for parents to turn to jars of food and so on to take out with them. And actually, when you look at the jars of food in a supermarket or whatever, the range of ingredients is really very limited. There's only a certain number of kind of dinners. The other thing is that often pureed foods are prepared kind of as a whole meal, all mushed up together. And baby-led weaning allows babies the chance to experience the foods and the tastes separately and to discover what each thing tastes like. And it helps the parents, too, to know if there's a particular taste the baby doesn't like, then you know which one it was. It wasn't just part of that chicken casserole dinner that they had. They will be able to show you which ones they don't like. So if anything, it increases the number. Sure, in the beginning, there are only some foods that you can cut into the right sort of shape. But even strips of meat, your little guy is managing egg at 8 months. What is the rush? They have ages to explore foods and discover all the foods there are. And actually, like I say, in terms of their intake of nutrients, that's not the point at the beginning. It's allowing the experience. So I think with a little imagination, there are actually a lot of foods that can be cut into the shape that a child can manage. Even babies of 7-8 months can pick up fistfuls of rice, say. You might not immediately think of that, of offering that to a baby, but they can have great fun with that and they can get some of it to their mouth. It's later, sure, when they're 9, 10, 11 months, they can pick up a single grain of rice, but they don't have to be able to do that in order to be able to eat it earlier than that. So we just have to let them show us.
Andrea H. wants to know if there's any tips for getting babies to explore foods that they don't actually seem interested in. You know, like let's say the kid doesn't want to eat kale. I don't know, something crazy. Instead of getting them immediately and repeatedly throw on the ground, how do you get them to just kind of explore it and appreciate the food that they got right in front of them?
I like that word, appreciate. You may not like what I'm going to say about it, because it's almost like, you know, a lot of babies wouldn't have this experience. Our baby should appreciate it. It's a little, I mean, I'm being tongue-in-cheek there, not meaning to be rude, but it's a little bit like, how would you get a baby to explore a toy that they didn't seem interested in? You don't. You just offer it and repeatedly offer, but accept their decision on the day. If they just don't seem to want it, it's really not worth pushing it, because you're more likely to end up with kind of behavior problems if they feel they're being forced to do something. Okay. You know, if they don't like a toy, we put it away, and when we try again later that day or the next day, we don't keep on at them. You must play with this toy. It's a really fun toy, you know? And so we should feel the same way, really, with the foods, because it's not about eating. And if we include them at any meal and let them explore different foods at different times, they will start to get interested. If they're really not interested, then they probably aren't ready. And there are many babies I've come across who just don't seem to show any interest in food until they're 10 months or older, some even over a year. Mm-hmm. And if they were being spoon-fed, they might well be among the babies who end up with really serious feeding problems because perhaps they've been forced to eat stuff that they really didn't want. Baby-led weaning is difficult sometimes for parents in that situation because they have to stand back and trust the baby when we want to get in there and get somehow make them eat it. But actually, that's the way to end up with problems.
Well, if there's anything that I've learned from parenting, it's that you can't make your baby to do anything that they don't want to do, really.
That's right.
Like stay still when you want to change them.
That's the new battle. Well, speaking of, you know, looking for those signs and that different babies are ready to eat at different times, Kathleen F. asks actually what signs we should be looking for that they're ready for baby-led weaning, whether it's oral skills or, you know, when they're ready to start holding. Like, what are we actually looking for?
We are looking for them to do it. How do we know when a baby is ready for walking? They do it. How do we know a baby's ready to pick up food? They do it. How do we know they're ready to take it to their mouth? They do it. All we can do is provide the opportunity. I'm kind of sometimes I feel like maybe I'm a little bit like a cracked record, so if anybody's heard me say it before, but when you bring your baby home, assuming the baby's born in hospital, you bring it home from hospital the first time, you'd perhaps lay it on the floor to have a kick, you're giving that baby the opportunity to walk. He doesn't do it because developmentally he can't, he's not ready. So we can provide that opportunity for babies, which brings me back to, I guess, what I was saying about including them in mealtimes right from when they're born. Why not? When they're ready, they will do it. So we have to make it available. In the past, we've made a decision when to start babies on solid foods. We've marked it on the calendar. We've asked our pediatrician or whatever. We've decided on a date. You don't really have to take that approach with baby-led weaning. They can be provided with the opportunities from whenever we feel comfortable with that. Another part, I think, of Kathleen's question from what I could see from what you sent me was that it was also to do with the transition from purees to more solid foods. That assumes that we have introduced purees, of course, and I guess that's one of the problems that baby-led weaning gets around, in the sense there is no transition. We don't have to make that decision. It's a little more difficult if the baby's already on purees, but the skill of picking up food and taking it to their mouth is what we're really looking for, because that tells us that the other skills will be there, the chewing and the swallowing and the digestion. The signs we're looking for are the outward ones. So if a baby can pick up food and take it to its mouth, then they're ready. It's also important, though, to recognize that the opposite is true. If a baby isn't able to do that, then they probably aren't ready to have the food either. So here's where we run into that question you asked me earlier about babies for whom baby-led weaning as a total approach may not be suitable. If you have a baby who was born extremely prematurely or who has certain dietary needs, then they may have to have pureed foods or food supplements or something, because at the point where they need other things nutritionally, they're not ready to feed them to themselves. But for the majority of normally developing healthy babies, we can be confident and trust them. When they show the signs of doing it, that's when they're ready.
Just to piggyback off that question, if we have some listeners who have already started their babies on purees and this might be their first time hearing about baby-led weaning, is there ever a point where they can't transition, or could they kind of start up even after they've introduced purees?
They could absolutely transition anytime. The difficulty is not for the baby, but for perhaps for themselves. If they've, for example, started on purees at 4 or 5 months, then if they go kind of cold turkey and switch straight only to baby-led weaning, they may be concerned that their baby simply doesn't eat anything for a couple of months. That could happen, because actually their baby really wasn't ready. That's the hard part. What they might need to do in the meantime is increase the milk feeds again, which may have dropped off, and make sure the baby's getting enough nourishment through milk, and basically start all over. If a baby is sort of beyond 6 months and is having purees, then it's just a question of providing them with the opportunity to handle food and offering the puree alongside or afterwards, in the same way that you talked about offering yogurt, respecting what the baby is saying about how much they do or don't want. But it's often, it's kind of in this is really a bit difficult to explain, but it's kind of inside the parent's head that the change needs to happen, because it's so easy to get used to deciding what your baby should eat and encouraging him to finish the bowl full. I'm not suggesting everybody is doing that, but that's very common, and it tends to be the way we're taught to feed babies, that someone decides how much they should have and then we try and encourage them to finish it. And actually, that's what we don't need to do. So making a switch from puree feeding to feeding pieces of food is not so much a switch for the baby, but a switch for the parents in the way they approach the feeding of their baby. Learning to step back and trust him is probably the hardest part.
Jill, that wraps up our listener questions. I got one final question for you.
Uh-huh.
Is there any last tips that you want to give to our listeners? Like, if there's one thing that they could take from this conversation that they've already heard or they haven't heard yet, what's the one thing that you want somebody who is interested in baby-led weaning to know?
That it's fun, and that their baby will learn so much from it, and they will learn by watching him, and they will have a new respect for what their baby can do. And some people have said to me it kind of translates into other parts of their baby's life, that they suddenly have a respect for their baby's ability to make decisions for himself, to be autonomous, and to know what he needs. And they just, and so they have that respect. But also it's about, there's nothing more fun than sitting back and watching your baby learn and seeing them discover new things and seeing how day on day their skills develop. It's absolutely fascinating. So there's lots in it for fun and learning for baby and parents. And you get nutrition thrown in as a freebie. So it's just fantastic.
Oh, great. Well, thank you, Jill. And if anyone wants more information on baby-led weaning, where can they reach you? And I know, as I said in the beginning, that you've written a few books, you've co-authored a few books. So where can they get this material?
The books are available in all good bookstores and on Amazon and so on. So they shouldn't be hard to get hold of. There are slightly different titles in the American versions. So you do need to check that it's the American one you're ordering if you're wanting it in the States. So, for example, baby-led weaning in the UK is called baby-led weaning, how to help your baby to love good food, I think it is. And in the States, it's baby-led weaning, the essential guide to introducing solid foods. So there are often slight differences, but they're widely available. There are loads of websites. I have my own website, which is rapleyweaning.com, and there's another one, baby-led.com, which relates to our books. But actually, those are really just a kind of check-in point. They're not the sources of a lot of information in their own right. The other thing I would encourage people to do is just put it in Google. There are so many blogs and forums out there like what you're doing, where folk can pick up advice and information from people who've already done it. So there's a whole big baby-led community out there, which is exciting to be part of.
I agree. I think one of the big things that gave me a lot of courage was actually just watching YouTube videos. And that's why I've now started putting up my own videos of Reese, because that's what helped me become more confident.
Just a very small word of caution about YouTube videos. There are some on there that purport to be baby-led weaning, but they show something different. And some of them do show slightly dangerous things, people putting food inside babies' mouths and so on. So that was really the reason that Tracy and I wrote our first book in the first place, was to clarify exactly what's meant. And there are some dodgy practices out there that folk need to be a little bit careful of. So just because it says it's baby-led weaning doesn't necessarily mean it is. So those crucial points about making sure the baby's in control and only the baby puts food in her mouth and that they're sitting upright, those are really important to remember when you're watching those videos.
So we're doing the right thing then, right? We're not doing these dodgy practices that you talked about?
I didn't see anything like that on yours, no.
Well, thank you so very much, Jill, for coming in and talking with us here on ParentCast. We loved having you. And as I said, you know, it's been a lot of fun for us to see Reese eating in kind of this baby-led weaning style, and I think that you gave my husband a bit more confidence as well.
A tad bit more.
I hope so.
All right, okay. Jill, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
All right, Blake, so let's decompress. What do you think about all of that?
Well, I thought it was pretty good. Again, a lot of information, but you know, Jill, I think she actually calmed my fears a little bit, especially with that whole choking versus gagging thing. Mm-hmm. You know, now noticing that Reese has only gagged. Yeah, I think that's a lot better than what I was originally thinking.
Yeah, and that gagging is actually kind of natural and normal for him.
I know, as bad as it looks, it's you know, it's actually teaching him the whole deal. And you know, the other thing I was surprised about is how serious people can get about this thing.
Yeah, they're pretty hardcore.
Oh my God, like, oh my, my kid can only feed himself and it must be large chunks of food. No purees whatsoever. Like, really?
And that's like, that's a lot of what I've encountered when I have gone on these forums. So it was nice to be able to talk to Jill and see that doing a hybrid can work and that it's okay, and that the woman who wrote the baby-led weaning books isn't going to reprimand you if, God forbid, you use a spoon every
once in a while. You're not like, you know, doing this deathly sin. Although, you know, I will say this too. Speaking to Jill, Jill, if you're listening to this, I just got to say this. You sound so cool with the accent and everything. I felt like I was in Downton Abbey, you know, or like I was in like in the middle of a Harry Potter movie.
Oh my goodness.
She just like sounds like super cool. And like, I just want to go have tea with her now.
We need to expose you to more people as well. I think this is what this show is.
I only know people around like Rhode Island and Boston. That's it.
Yes.
I felt like more smart listening to her.
Well, speaking of smart, do you feel like you are smarter and more well-versed in baby-led weaning? Will you now give it a try when you watch Reese?
Yes, I will give it a try, although I will say that I'm still a little apprehensive of doing it alone, because I feel more comfortable with you here doing it, but I think I'm probably more apt to try it again.
And he is older, so he's not even at that six-month-old point now. He's 10 months old, so he's actually grabbing things that are small.
Yeah, and that was the terrifying part, when he was 6 months old, and you're first trying, and he's putting all this little food in his mouth. That was a terrifying part. But again, like I said, now that he's finally learning, I think it's getting much better.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad we learned a lot, and hopefully all of you listeners did too. But for now, we're going to change gears and head on into the wine of the week. All right, Blake, so what do you got?
The Olympics.
Why the Olympics?
The Olympics, well, not necessarily the Olympics, but spoilers about the Olympics. All I wanted to do the other day was just sit down with my son and watch the hockey game, the U.S. versus Russia. And when I was at work, I avoided everything, all the spoilers as much as I could. And some guy just came up to me when I was at work. And he's like, so, U.S. beat the Russia today. And it happened in that morning. And all I wanted to do was just sit down with my kid and watch the game. And I couldn't. Because now I already knew the end. And it got me so mad. The spoilers are killing me. I can't do it anymore.
Well, luckily, it's only a week left. So hopefully you'll be okay.
All right. How about you? What do you got?
My wine of the week is that Reese thinks he is a crocodile. And every single time that I try to change his diaper, he takes every ounce of strength inside of his body and tries to turn and twist his body. God, I'm calling it a twirn because it's like a turn twist. So twirn. He twirns his body and does these weird contortionist kind of things. And I can't change his diaper. And now that he's eating solid foods, ladies and gentlemen, poop is disgusting. And I need to take care of business, and I can't take care of business.
Yeah, you know what I hate too about that? I'm sorry, but I hate too when if you have the diaper like somewhere else and he kicks and he puts his foot in the diaper
the dirty
by accident.
Diaper. Yes.
And like, poop all over his foot. Oh God, killing me too.
Yeah, so you know, now that I used to think that he would be good during diaper change time, and yeah, I'm eating a piece of humble pie on that, because my child is like everyone else's child and hates changing his diaper. He just wants to play. So that's my wine of the week. All right, let's switch from the wines and head on over to our wins of the week.
All right, I'll start. My win of the week goes to my father-in-law.
Really? My dad?
Yeah, that's right, baby.
Aww.
My father-in-law. Imagine that. No, wicked great guy. First of all, let me just say, he's like Santa. He's the best.
He is like Santa.
Oh, my God.
In every way, shape, and form. Just so sweet.
We actually should put a picture of him up just so people can see
him.
Okay, anyway, it goes to him. And the reason why it goes to him is because he came over on Valentine's night just to watch Reese. So Mary and I could go out and go to a Mexican restaurant and enjoy, have a couple of margaritas, and actually prepare more stuff for this podcast. So my win of the week goes to him. He made it all happen. And
you need to also thank Nana
Nana as well. I'm sorry. You're 100% right,
His
Nana.
Wife, my dad's wife.
That's true. Nana, I'm 100% sorry. please forgive me. The win of the week also goes to you as well.
You guys were lifesavers. We did not have a fancy Valentine's Day plan, so thanks for getting us out of the house. And you know what, Blake? I'm going to echo that. I'll take that win of the week for myself as well.
You're stealing my win of the week?
Totally am.
Oh, how unoriginal.
Well, I also just want to save on time. So
you're lucky I love you.
This goes out to all of the people who all of a sudden surprise us with babysitting. So thank you, everybody. Really, the main reason that I didn't want to do a win is because I'm so excited about my parent pick of the week. I know that you're going to laugh. I love my new bibs. They are amazing. Not for me, but for my baby. If I had to wear, I probably should wear a bib. I get pretty dirty. But nonetheless, Reese's new bibs are from IKEA, but I bought them on Amazon. Okay. They're $5 a piece. They're like these really cool bibs that are like a shirt. So you strap your kid into the high chair, you buckle them all up and they're nice and safe, and then you put this shirt on them so it has sleeves, and then you just Velcro it behind their neck and he does not get dirty. It even has one of those pelican bibs on the bottom, so I'm going to make sure to include in our show notes a link to these bibs because they're $5 a piece and I think he's going to have them as he grows up and when he does art projects, and especially with baby-led weaning, this kid makes a mess, but the mess just stays on the bib. So that is my parent pick of the week. How about you?
You know what? I'm going to refrain from my parent pick of the week because my parent pick of the week, it's not going to be as good as yours. Oh. So I'll save it for next podcast.
I feel like I need to add a boo soundtrack right now after that. Oh, well.
Do it. No. Just add it in. Might as well. I know. I promise. The next podcast, I'll have a good one. Don't blame me. Blame my wife for having such a good parent pick of the week.
Well, it's coming close to closing time, but we want to make sure that you can get all of this information and links to Jill Rapley's books. So you're going to want to head to our website. It's parentcastpodcast.com.
And grab us over at Facebook, too, at facebook.com/parentcast.
You can find us on Twitter at parentcast.
And then if you're old school like me, again, you can always get us at Gmail at parentcast@gmail.com.
And as I said, we've been actually doing a lot of baby-led weaning with our son, Reese. So you can check out my blog. It's called tallmomtinybaby.com. And I have a ton of videos and photos up there. So you're going to want to be sure to check that out. All right, Blake. So what do you think?
Thought it was pretty good. A lot of fun, as always. And hopefully I get a chance to stay away from those spoilers about the Olympics. So nobody, none of you put anything on our Facebook about the Olympics or any. I don't want to see it. Don't want to see it in my news feed. I don't care. I want to watch the game with my son. So right. Make sure you get back to us and get the feedback. If it's good, we'll put it on there. If it sucks, well then, as always, you left out.
Talk soon, everybody. Bye. Parentcast is a Tall Mom Media production. Please do not take anything that we say as true facts. We are not specialists or really anything. We're just parents who are trying to figure this thing out. So research things on your own.
Don't sue us.
Please.
What for?